Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We had Kathy Kleiner on. Now, you may not recognize that name out of the gate, but, of course, you recognize the name Ted Bundy. There's the new upcoming movie with Zac Efron, extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile. Netflix documentary that's out right now. It's really blown the whole thing. I mean, it got a lot of attention because Zac Efron, who's, you know, incredibly handsome, good-looking guy, charismatic, but so was Ted Bundy in his own way. And he got some criticism for doing this, but I think it's an important part of that story. You know, he lured girls because what do we always think? Oh, it's a good-looking person.
They look normal.
They're going to be good.
He must be fine, yeah.
Because of movies, villains are unattractive, and the good guy is handsome. That's just this bizarre thought process we have. And he was clever, and he was smart. He was a failed law student, but he knew enough. And he certainly was smart enough to make it. He just chose not to go all the way through.
Well, he was also the core of rage, like that dude.
Yeah, the depth of his rage really does separate him from so many other serial killers. Like, I tend to think of most serial killers like Dexter, like a well-thought-out, like BTK. He thought it was funny in his own way to taunt the police.
And it was methodical, and it had a process.
And this was abject rage. He would just, I mean, with a log, when he tried to kill Kathy.
He found firewood on the way in as he broke into that sorority house.
You know, when he was finally convicted, I was shocked. Even the judge in the case, when he finally got the death sentence, was somewhat enamored of him. You can hear him say it. And it's a pretty shocking moment with everything.
A judge in Miami today followed the jury's recommendation and sentenced Theodore Bundy to die in the electric chair for the murder of two co-eds.
Before pronouncing the sentence, Judge Edward Cowart let Bundy make a statement.
I'm not asking for mercy, for I find it somewhat absurd to ask for mercy for something I did not do. So I will be tortured for and will suffer for and receive the pain for that act, but I will not share the burden for the guilt.
In imposing sentence, Judge Cowart cited the savagery of the crimes and what he called the indifference of the defendant. Then, in an unexpected move, perhaps an afterthought, Cowart stunned the courtroom with some parting words for Bundy.
Take care of yourself, young man.
Thank you.
I say that to you sincerely. Take care of yourself. It's a tragedy for this court to see such a total waste, I think, of humanity that I've experienced in this court. You're a bright young man. You made a good lawyer. I'd love to have you practice in front of me, but you went another way, partner.
So Kathy Kleiner stopped by the show, but we had pretty limited time last time. And her story's much bigger than a victim of Ted Bundy, thankfully unsuccessful. But she really, I think, threw herself into investigating this, and she never let it define her. And most people would have crumpled, and at the very least, they'd have changed their name. They would never speak of it. We repress it. We don't, you know, we've done nothing wrong. Like, if you're a victim of something like this, you've done nothing wrong. But somehow there's a weird guilt. I think there's a survivor's guilt for people, for the girls that did.
The girls that lost.
Yeah. And she's incredibly brave. There's a big Rolling Stone article this month. Hey, Kathy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And I really do appreciate you coming back by me. And we'll start with the story again. You know, when it happened with you in that sorority house, I mean, you're just a young girl, 1978. You're how old at the time? 18, 19 years old?
Yes, 19.
And where were you originally from?
Miami, Florida.
And what were you in school for?
Actually, when I went to Florida State in the fall of 76, I wanted to be an archaeologist. That was my first thought of a class I wanted to pursue. I remember going out to one of the digs that was with my class, and I broke a fingernail, and I was thinking, well, this is far too physical for me. I have to find another class that I want to be interested in.
But by nature, you're a curious person, though. You have a deep curiosity of the things around you.
Yes, I hope I do, and there's so much to do and so much to see. I don't want to miss out on anything.
You and I think that plays into the story. So, okay, there's that terrible night. Bundy has already, now at this point, he went to school in Tacoma, Washington's high school, and he went to Washington University in Seattle. He gets 190 credit hours and a degree in psychology, and I think that's important. Then he gets a job tracking habitual criminals for a King County Law and Justice Planning Office in Washington State, enters law school in 73, leaves in 74, but clearly he is not of low IQ. He is charismatic. He is somewhat handsome, and you'd never met him prior to the attack. You awoke to him in your room, but he had kidnapped people and killed people. He had escaped a courthouse. He had escaped a jail. And then he comes down to Florida in 78 in January, Tallahassee, and he rents a room in a rooming house, poses as a student. And between January 7th and 15th, he can't even control that rage. He finds an unlocked door at your sorority house. And by the door, I think there was firewood. And he comes in and he kills Margaret Bowman and Lisa Levy, in terrible ways. And tell me what happened that night.
When he did come in the back door of the sorority house and picked up a piece of firewood that was laying there, I think he knew that he was going to go in and attack as many as he could. And with his MO, he was going to kill them.
Sure.
So when he entered the sorority house that night, he came up the front stairway. The sorority house is a beautiful southern mansion. When you walked in the front doors, there was a beautiful wood staircase that took you upstairs. However, the way he entered was through the back door, which he had to walk through our recreation room to get to those stairs. As he walked up there, at the very landing, the top of the landing, was a bathroom. So if you walk straight through the door, went to the bathroom, he actually took a right. And down that hallway, which was pretty dark at the time, he had unscrewed the light bulbs in the hallway so that they didn't fall off. They didn't fall off. However, they weren't armed.
Right. And he knew to do that. So as he walked down the hallway, he would just unscrew each bulb as he walked past it.
Yes.
Oof.
Yes. So he knew he was premeditated at this time, and he was definitely going to do evil. And I think he was out of control. I think he was so hyped up that he just couldn't control at that point. He went into the first door on the left was Margaret's room. He went in, attacked her with the log also, strangled her, and raped her. When he was done, he put the sheets right up to her neck to make her look like she was sleeping in the bed. He then went across the hall to Lisa's room. This is when I think he completely was out of control and in a full rage. He attacked Lisa, strangled her with pantyhose, and at this point, he raped her also and bit her. So that bite mark ended up to be one of the things that helped convict him.
Right. It was his undoing, yeah. So then he enters your room. Now you are, and this is the lucky part, and if there's anything you could use the term lucky for, two people are in this room. You have a roommate. You weren't in a solo room by yourself. So he walks in the room, but you wake up because he falls over a trunk that's between the two beds in the somewhat small room.
Yes, there were two twin beds, each parallel on the wall. We had a trunk in the center. It was a low trunk, just to put your clothes in and to also put our books and things on it. But it was a low trunk between our beds, which had about 3 feet on each side of the trunk. And when he walked into the room, I was sleeping, but I heard the noise of the door opening. And just a few seconds later, I heard the trunk being tripped over and a lot of noise being made. I opened my eyes. I was laying on my left side. I opened my eyes and saw this big dark figure, outline of someone. I didn't know who it was. It was dark in the room. We lived on the second floor, so it was darker than it would be downstairs with normal lighting. He came into the room, and I saw him just as he was lifting his arm over his head to attack me, to strike me with the lock. Once he did, at that moment, I was wide awake, and I felt the thud. It was not a sharp pain. It was more of a thud and a pressure, which confused me. I didn't know what was happening. And while he was doing that, my roommate Karen woke up. So he went and attacked her as well. I was still in my bed moaning and groaning. In my head, I was screaming, help me, help me. Why doesn't anyone help me? But actually, I was just making small noises because he had shattered my jaw so bad, and I had almost bit off my tongue during that attack. So we were on the second floor of the sorority, facing the back of the house, and lights were coming up from a car that was entering the driveway in the back, and the light of the car lights showed up in our room and illuminated so much that it was like a miracle light came in the room. I remember hearing him trip the trunk again, and then he ran out of our door, down the hallway, down the stairs, and out the front doors.
And the next thing you know, there's paramedics are in the room, and they thought you'd been shot in the face. It was so bad. And you remember you do remember seeing lights and thinking it's like a carnival, like there's a circus happening.
Yes, I remember they were carrying me down the gurney, and the paramedics did say, when I was saying, you know, what happened, he said, honey, we're going to take care of you. You've been shot in the face, because they didn't know what happened. They just saw that my cheek was flapped open to my ear from my mouth, and he assumed it was a gunshot. When they carried me down the gurney, out the front doors, I remember laying there and having all these heads looking over me. I didn't obviously know what was going on still. And there were police lights and the fire truck lights and the ambulance lights, and it was all bright. And I was just like, you know, what's going on? And it looks like a carnival with all the lights. And then I looked up, and there were like six heads looking down at me as I lay on the gurney. They took me into the ambulance, and that's when they took me out to Tallahassee Memorial Hospital.
And As early as a week, and this shocked me reading this article, only a week later, your jaw wired shut, a guard at the door, the police bring you back to your sorority room, a week, 7 days. And obviously, nobody's going to change anything in that because it's a crime scene, but they wanted to see if he had stolen anything because they, you know, obviously they're trying to connect somebody. But you walk into that scene, and there it is.
That was hard. I remember I didn't want to go back, and I had to go up those big wooden, beautiful staircase. And there was an officer on each side of my arms just keeping me steady as I walked upstairs. And the first thing I noticed was there was crime scene tape on Margaret's door. It was closed, but there was the tape. And then I turned my head, and there was also tape on Lisa's door, which was also shut. I walked down, and my room was next on the left, and I went in, and it was horrific. The room was covered in blood. It was all over the ceiling, all over the walls, all over my bed. And I remember I had just purchased in December a beautiful bedspread that my mom and I went shopping for, and it was white with green leaves all over it. It was covered in blood. It was really bright and crimson at this point. Oof. I turned around, and my little dresser was there, and they asked if I saw anything missing, if he could have taken anything, and the top of it was full of the dust, the black dust they used to raise fingerprints.
Right.
And I was just like, I don't know. I was just like dumbfounded. I didn't see anything obviously missing. And then one of the officers asked if I ever used red nail polish to fix a run in my pantyhose. And I thought that, you know, odd to ask. And I said, no, you know, I never do that. I use clear polish. So I had to turn around and leave the room then, and with all the crime scene tape, they opened it up for me to leave, and I took one look back into the room, and I saw my beautiful bedspread that was destroyed, and that's what I was thinking as I was leaving the room, not of the attack, not of everything else I saw, but I saw my beautiful bedspread that was
right.
that was now ruined.
Well, and it's just,
that's funny how the mind works when
yeah.
you're in a traumatic situation and you're not in control. It was odd, I thought.
And but you didn't let this define you. If you're just doing the show, Kathy Kleiner is with us. There's an incredible article in Rolling Stone magazine this month, and people are talking about her and this Ted Bundy, extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile movie with Zac Efron and the documentary on Netflix. It's brought it all back to the surface again, and he was remarkable in the sense that he was such a high IQ and is true sociopath and psychopath and so very violent, and he conned and he manipulated and over and over again. But you went to the sentencing and the trial, but you weren't able to identify him per se because he was wearing a mask. It was dark, and he immediately started to try to beat you to death. But yet, even though you know that you weren't... You know, even when you're testifying, you knew in your heart you weren't going to identify him, but you knew it was important to be there. Most people would have gotten out of it and said, look, I can't identify him. I don't want to see this guy. I don't want to live through this again. It's a pretty traumatic thing, but that's not how you handled it at all. You decided that you had to be there.
Yes, I had to be there. I was there for the beginning of the attack and when he first came to me, and I wanted to be there toward the end when they were going to pursue him and find him guilty of the crimes that he always said he didn't do. When I walked into the courtroom and I was sent to sit in the witness box, I remember seeing him. He was across the room sitting at the defense table. Then they had the prosecution table next to it. And as I walked in, I stared him down. He was sitting there with his arms on his elbows on the table and his head and his hands, just looking at me. And I walked up, sat down, and the first thing I felt was sick to my stomach. It was just like everything in my stomach just settled there. I then looked at him and stared him down as much as he was staring me. I wanted him to know he had no control over me anymore, that I was controlling myself and what I did and couldn't do.
At this point, how old are you now? 20, 21, 20?
Yes, 20.
And I mean, it's that's an amazing amount of strength to me. Because he was so unbelievably manipulative. And he had, like we talked about before, he had that degree in psychology. He had enough law understanding that the judge, and were you there when they sentenced him? And that judge said, take care of yourself, son. Seriously, I mean, you could tell the judge was somehow under that spell.
Yes, I was there in the courtroom when the closing remarks were given, and then again when the sentencing was brought forth.
And let me play it for the audience here. Just the judge's reaction, which I was very shocked by. I'd never known this until recently. This when after he'd sentenced him to die.
Take care of yourself, young man.
Thank you.
I say that to you sincerely. Take care of yourself. It's a tragedy for this court to see. It's such a total waste, I think, of humanity that I've experienced in this court. You're a bright young man. You made a good lawyer. I'd love to have you practice in front of me, but you went another way, partner.
To me, that's. What were you thinking when you heard that?
I was just astounded because he had manipulated and shown the side that he wanted people to see, which was the good boy in him. And he had done that for so long, going to the Republican Party and working and mingling and going, learning how people like that are not caught. And if they're caught, how they are not proven guilty. He learned all the tricks of the trade, and when the judge did say that, it made me remember that he shown what he wanted people to see. That's how he faced everything.
And he eventually confessed.
In his mind.
He eventually told the stories. And I think it wasn't him looking for absolution. It wasn't looking for forgiveness from anybody. I think that his ego was so insane that he had to tell people what he had done once he realized he was on his way out. He was going to ride the lightning. And I think it was just ego. When he finally just said, okay, I'll tell you everything. The reason I took Polaroids, because when you work that hard, I believe the quote was, you want to remember it. And I'm just stunned by the evil. And I want to make this point before we get off the phone. You, instead of dismissing it all, running away, or pushing it down inside, or just trying to move on, you built a pretty big library on Bundy, and you in some way you felt like you wanted to understand it. This takes me back to you wanting to be an archaeology student and your curiosity. You really did dive into serial killer mentality for a while, correct?
Yes, I read every book at that point and saw all the movies because I wanted to understand him as a person, kind of do the same thing he did to other people to find out exactly why he was doing that and understanding that he was in control of his life and he wanted to be the person that he wanted to be and let no one see the other side of him. So I understood him now the more I read about him, that he wasn't this big black blur in my head. He was actually a living person who killed people. And I think at that point, when he lost control of how he was going to die and what was going on, that he did tell his story as much as he could because he was extending his life by that point.
Right.
And at the end of the time when he was executed, he goes, I'll tell you more. I have more to tell you. And they were like, you know, no more. You're going to die now.
Well, I think you're incredibly brave. Incredibly brave. And I think that it's so good that you've spoken up and explained this to people who may be victims themselves on some level, that you do still have your control of your life. You do and should be curious about why somebody would act that way, because I think that's how you get past it. Just pretending it didn't happen, pretending you don't want to talk about it, it only works for so long. It's always going to come out of us, isn't it?
I do believe so. I mean, if you don't talk about it and you hold it within, you're going through the same crime over and over. You're being attacked mentally, and I think it does nothing but harm. I talked about it and read about it until it wasn't this brutal attack. It was a situation I went through, and I wasn't going to let it define me.
Very good. You turn the lights on, and you see the monsters for what they are.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate you, Kathy. I appreciate you very much. I got to let you go because I know you have many other interviews. But, man, thank you so much for stopping back by.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Y'all have a good day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.